This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. He founded a green buildings materials firm. He doesn't own a car. He plants lots of trees. Canadian technology startup Third Whale named Matthias Gelber the greenest person on the planet in 2008. Now the environmental activist and entrepreneur, as well as founder of Eco Warriors, has come up with a practical guide on reducing your carbon footprint. It's called The Green Man's Guide to Green Living and Working, and he joins us now to tell us why he's on a mission to help Malaysians protect the environment. Matthias, you say you've had green instincts from an early age, having grown up in a small German village surrounded by forests. Can you point to a particular eureka moment in your life when you realized that this was something you wanted to devote yourself to?
Yeah, hi Lynn. Nice to be on your show. I think when the time came that I had to decide what subject do I study in life, I kind of felt, let's go for chemistry. At least I can understand where all the pollution comes from, and I'm better able to help the planet. But already at an earlier stage, a couple of years before that, we had in Europe acid rain destroying the forests, and I got involved in campaigning against the stopping of acid rain. And we as youngsters were involved in green initiatives, green activities. Beside the connection to Mother Nature, it was as well something that our teachers tried to inspire us to do. Germany, with its bad Second World War Nazi history, where a lot of evil came from our country, we were challenged to be better people, sources of peace, sources of support for the planet. And I think that influenced as well to kind of try and create a better future. So all these things together, I knew my mission in life was to help Mother Nature and inspire other people to do so.
So now you're trying to convert all Malaysians to this green way of life?
Yes. After 10 years of living in Malaysia, when I got asked what has changed, I kind of concluded actually very little. If I go to the supermarket, which happens very seldom because I don't really buy so many things, especially the things that I don't need, still most people look for or get or take the plastic bag. And yes, we've had loads of environmental awareness initiatives, but there seem to be very few people translating that into daily action. So I have told myself I need to give it a final big shot. And the conclusion was I need a book and I need a campaign. So the book is here, the campaign is here, the campaign is called The Negawatt Revolution. My conclusion was something that everybody can get involved in is their electricity bill. Electricity costs money. If you save electricity, you can help the planet, quotation marks, save the planet or save the human species, and you can save money. And it breaks through this barrier that I hear very often in Malaysia that, oh, green is too expensive. Here is an initiative that doesn't cost you anything. You can take measures at home that doesn't cost you anything, but save you money and help the planet. And in the spirit of sikit sikit lama lama jadi bukit, we want to grow a whole community where we then aggregate all the kilowatt hours of electricity we save. We convert them into CO2 emissions. I don't know whether many people know that, but each kilowatt hour produced in Malaysia is equivalent to 0.747 kilogram of carbon dioxide. We want to add that up in terms of saving of all of our users who can get a free account, and then create a mountain of CO2 emission reductions where we can see if we work together, we can really make a big difference.
So how can people participate directly in the Negawatt Revolution?
They can just go to the website, negawattrevolution.org. Nega starts with N. People mix it up. Mega is more. Nega is the electricity you do not use, the electricity you save. So negawatt, watt with double T, revolution.org. Go in there. You can set up a free account. The account gives you the chance to put in your electricity data from your TNB bill. Everybody has that. That is your key performance indicator. It gets measured and gets sent to you every month. And then you get an average consumption. You get a dashboard. You can set your target. And you get connected with people that have about a similar household, that have similar targets, and you can communicate with them. So it's like a social media version of reducing your electricity bill with inspiring ideas and hopefully with connecting with others. And it's all free of charge.
What tips do you personally have for people to reduce their electricity usage? Because I think, you know, as you rightly point out, everyone wants to save money, right?
That, yes.
I mean, that's a big motivator in terms of just using less. But I think more often than not, we're just careless. We leave things on, we forget, or it's hard to break habit cycles.
Yes, yes. The first thing that I would point people to is the aircon, because when people tell me what is their electricity bill, I more or less know, do they have the aircon on at night while they sleep or not? That is the big energy consumer, which makes up, you know, up to 50% or more of people's electricity bill. So what I would recommend people to do is try and play around with your usage of aircon, especially if you're using a duvet and your temperature is very low, like 20 to 22. Try and push up the temperature a little bit. You can use the temperature regulation on your system. Try and use the fan instead of the aircon. That saves huge amounts of electricity, because a fan has about 20 to 50 watts as a consumption, whereas one horsepower is about 750 to 1,000. So it's 20 to 30 times higher running the aircon. If you need the aircon for a certain kind of time, try and use the timer. Switch it on for 1 hour while you fall asleep, and then let it switch off automatically. That's a big one. Other simple things, you know, why do you let the Wi-Fi router run all night long? You can switch it off, and at the same time, you reduce the electromagnetic fields in your room that you are exposed to while you're sleeping. Try and take a shower without switching on the water heater. That's what I do every day. Even when I was living for a while in Genting, Awana, like in Gotong Jaya, even there it's much colder. I didn't use the water heater. But I think what my book tries to do is it tries to inspire people to take small steps. I don't expect everybody to have an electricity bill of 30 ringgit, which is what I've had consistently during the last 10 years when I've lived by myself. But I would like to inspire people to take the step to make measures of improvement. Natural lighting, for example, here in the BFM office, the blinds are on. All the lights are on. The blinds are down. If you would open up the blinds, you could maybe use some of the natural lighting. I had the same just 3 hours ago. I was chairing the EU Climate Change Day discussion at UKM in Bangi. And there we had as well the blinds down and all the lights were on. When I started the discussion, I said, let's try it out. We lifted the blinds and we switched off 80% of the lights, and we still had a perfect light availability in the room. So playing around with these things, look around yourself. Is there anything where you can switch off electrical items and use Mother Nature instead? Use the flow of air, use the wind. And when you, for example, buy or rent a new house, go there in the evening with aircon being switched off and figure out, is this a place I would be comfortable to sleep without air conditioning? We as consumers have a choice. We should use that choice and integrate environmental criteria into our purchasing decisions that we make.
So what's the response been like since you launched on April 22nd?
The response has been, I would say, okayla so far. Obviously, as a writer, you expect masses of people, you know, chasing after your book. This hasn't been the case, but I've had, let's say, good responses from groups, like, for example, the Climate Change Day Today as well. They made the book a gift for the students that attended the event. And I think that is going to be my strategy for the use of the book, to integrate it into green events. I'm making it available for PDF download as well, for ebook. I've even written in the book, please share it, please reuse it. My editor said, oh, don't do that, it's bad for business. But for me, the main intention is to let the book, the message, travel so it can result in action. So, so far, you know, response has been modest, but hopefully that will pick up.
We've been talking about individual actions. What eco-friendly practices would you urge businesses to adopt?
For businesses, one focus can be to look at their main consumption of materials, electricity and water. Again, these are all linked to cost items. When I first came to this region, I remember a talk I gave in Indonesia, and the business people there were saying, oh yeah, in Germany you need to go green because waste disposal costs a lot of money. Here, oh, we don't worry so much about it because it's very cheap, or it costs nothing, or we can get rid of it on the roadside. I said, yeah, the cost of waste is actually one thing, your disposal is another thing. Have you ever calculated how much money you used to buy the raw materials, the machine time, the electricity, the labor to turn your expensive raw materials into waste, the true cost of waste is much, much bigger. So first, I would like to urge businesses to look at their existing electricity bill, water bill, material bill. Can they turn more of their raw material into product rather than into waste? And then I would like them to look at opportunities in terms of product or service innovation. Can they actually deliver more innovative, eco-friendly, efficient products? I think Malaysian businesses sometimes tend to focus on business as usual. They don't yet believe that there is a green consumer out there. But I was giving a talk in December at the Malaysian police force, and they were launching their green procurement strategy. And at the beginning, I, you know, wasn't so sure whether this was going to be something very serious. But when I saw at the event that they were actually starting to significantly look at buying green products, green building items, LED lights, electric vehicles, bikes, and so on and so on, I got the impression something serious is starting, so businesses can identify what are product categories that maybe are not yet being bought by your customers, but might be happening in the future because they are greener solutions, better solutions for the planet. Green procurement is going to come. It's just a question of time. And be smart about it. I mean, one area where a lot has happened is in the area of green buildings. But I still have the impression that most developers just tick the boxes with going for GBI. But what is the end value you are delivering to your customer? I have had that experience that my friend stayed in a GBI certified building and his electricity bill was much higher than in the normal house he used to stay in before. We need to focus on reducing people, their electricity bill, making sure there are no toxic chemicals in the house. That is what people will actually see as added value. Other than that, they will never want to pay a premium for green buildings unless they get direct benefits from it.
I'm speaking today with Matthias Gelber, author of The Green Man's Guide to Green Living and Working, also founder of Eco Warriors. Up next, we find out more about the book, as well as the tips contained within it about how we can all be living greener. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Matthias Gelber, founder of Eco Warriors and author of The Green Man's Guide to Green Living and Working. So let's talk about the book then. Who do you think or hope your readers will be? And, you know, who did you write the book for?
I wrote the book for Malaysians, actually. I had a Malaysian audience in mind and I wanted to break through this barrier that I've seen over the last 10 years, that we have a lot of green awareness events, but very few people then translate that into daily action in their life and in their business. So I have everybody in mind, and I've separated it into chapters: your life, your home, your family, your community, your office, the place that you're working in, the company that you're working in, and if you're an entrepreneur, your business. So I've only focused on areas that we have control over or influence on, because those are the areas that we can make a change. And I'm sharing stories, examples, case studies, tips, my own experiences, and why it is relevant from an environmental perspective and as well from a financial perspective. I'm trying to give tips as well of how we can go green and save money at the same time, or identify new business opportunities for entrepreneurs. So that is the scope of the book. I hope it's light enough for people to read. It's not too technical, but at the same time, it's got some factual information in there.
What are three useful things that any one person can do to cut their emissions? Earlier, we talked about electricity. You talked about air conditioning. Yes. But overall?
Electricity is actually the number one when you look at emissions. I have a section where I'm talking about the carbon footprint. For me, traveling is a major aspect of our emissions and carbon footprint, because we burn fuel in cars. We have my biggest carbon footprint in my own life. I have about a carbon footprint of 20 tons of CO2 a year. And the main contributor is 2 or 3 overseas trips to Germany to visit my mom in the Kampong and to visit the German business, the building eco-friendly building materials business that I co-founded. And I make them carbon neutral by purchasing a certain amount of trees to offset the CO2 emissions. actually, I have a green pension system, a biodiverse forest plantation in Panama that has absorbed in the last 10 years nearly 200 tons of carbon dioxide. I even got a certificate for it. So travel, mobility, can you shift away from using the car all the time? Can you use public transport? Even using the local cab that runs on gas is lower carbon emissions than having your own petrol car. So beside energy, I think the traveling is a key issue. And we're getting new LRTs coming in. I think public transport will be easier. I haven't had a car for the last 11 years.
In Malaysia,
yeah. Actually, the last 25 years, I only had a car for 1.5 years in the UK when I needed to do a lot of jobs in a lot of remote locations. Other than that, I've always lived without a car. So that helps a lot. I think as well our waste, our food that we choose, that's an area where I still have scope for improvement. The more we shift towards a vegetarian diet, move away from red meat, that can significantly reduce your carbon footprint. So those are some of the key areas.
You've said that you'd like to see a 10% reduction in energy in Malaysian households. Is that easy to achieve?
In most cases, it's very easy to achieve if you're willing to change the aircon usage practice. As I said, people who use the aircon at night, they have an easy job in theory if they're willing to make that lifestyle change to cut their electricity bill actually by 20, 30 or 40%. I have a friend of mine. We have an online monitoring system of his electricity bill. I can see on my computer or my phone when they're taking a shower because suddenly the electricity peaks up. And I can see when his wife comes home because she uses the aircon, he uses the fan. And the electricity consumption suddenly goes massively up. So that target is actually a very modest target at 10%. Only for those people that have a very low electricity bill. Some people have a electricity bill, they don't even need to pay anything. I think if you're below 20 ringgit, for them it will be difficult to reduce their consumption even more. But somebody that's got an electricity bill of 200 ringgit or above, to achieve 10% should be very easy.
Is it an uphill battle to mobilize people in Malaysia to adopt a more sustainable lifestyle? And why are you finding, you know, if so, why?
It is an uphill battle. That is one of the reasons why when after 10 years I looked back, I came to the conclusion I have actually achieved very little in terms of real systemic change. I think the barriers in Malaysia are people perceive green as expensive, inconvenient, and never mind, you know, I can't make that much of a difference. That's why through the Negawatt Revolution, I want to group us all together so we can see the mountain of difference that we are making. I'm focusing on things that are actually low cost or no cost to break down that barrier that green is expensive. I want to actually incentivize people with that option of saving. And I think climate change and the potential danger of 2 Celsius temperature rise, more floods, droughts and other things that we've experienced, all of those things is kind of too far away from people's daily worry. What people are worried about is money, big house, big car. And that is maybe the thing that people think makes them happy, or that's what they've been told. I remember when I gave a green talk in Penang, I had the guy sitting in the first row when I said, you know, I don't have a car. Not having a car saves me a lot of money. The only comment I got was, No car, no girlfriend, ma. You know, like that perception, you're only a desirable guy if you have a big car. Otherwise, you know, you won't find a girlfriend. So
it continues to be a status symbol.
Yes.
Yeah.
So these are the challenges. But I believe that if we reconnect back with Mother Nature, if we realize that your grandchildren's future is at stake, that there are already signs that climate change is making Malaysians suffer, costs a lot of money, impacts the economy negatively. We only have one planet. I am hoping that people will start, you know, realizing this is serious. And at the same time, that we will create a more green economy. So those people who actually go green, buy green, offer green, will be rewarded by the economy.
Again, we've been talking a lot about individual changes, what we can all do. But would you agree that the greatest environmental damage actually comes from governments and not individuals?
I don't think we can say it in that simplistic way, because governments set framework conditions, they can improve things, but it's us, the consumers, and us, the business people, I'm one as well, that, you know, set up manufacturing plants that produce the products that are being required by the society out there. So it's a combination of all of us. I think we need to work with changing policies. When I was in Germany, you know, fighting for let's reduce the pollution coming from factories, from power plants, so we don't get the sulfur dioxide, the NOx coming down in acid rain. Initially, the response of German industry was, cannot, because we will suffer. We will lose business. It will be very expensive. But the opposite was the case. Germany became the number one green technology provider, the number one exporter of a lot of these technologies, because it was an early starter. And all the parties had to go green because the voters were expecting that, and the voters were supporting the Green Party, and the Green Party became so strong that all the other parties suddenly became green. And then that change that was triggered off in German society actually benefited the German economy and benefited German business. So often the opposite is the case. I mean, the economic development from, let's say, deforesting a natural rainforest gives some very few people fast and easy money in the short term. But it's going to be a big damage to the future generation. And it is often the reason why rivers that maybe before had loads of surface areas for the water to sink in, and all the water that gets washed off from silting that we have seen last year in the floods, a lot of that came from deforested areas that augmented and increased the severity of the floods. So there is a huge cost linked to not treating Mother Nature fairly. And it might be big money for very few in the short term, but a gigantic bill for many people, for the whole nation in the long term.
Aside then from making these changes in your own life, you know, in looking at your own emissions, looking at your electricity usage, would those wanting to protect the environment, have their time better spent, spending more effort engaging the government, instead of just kind of making these changes on a ground level?
I think we need a combination of both. And to talk with different political decision makers in Malaysia is something that is very important. I engage with the government. I regularly speak at government-related events with the Green Tech Ministry, KETA. But I'm not politically active. I'm a foreigner. I'm a guest here in the country, so I don't get involved in politics. I focus on the level of what can we do within our own level of responsibility. And I think this is the place where everybody can take decisions and make changes. I can't solve any deforestation issues in Sarawak or in Kuantan because I'm too far away of it. I have no level of influence. It's not my role here in Malaysia. But I can give people examples and inspire them. And yes, I would love to see all the Malaysian parties to have a very strong green manifesto and green agenda, but it's a reflection of the voters. If you out there, the voters, don't care and voice it out that this is a priority, then the political parties in Malaysia will have a limited focus on it.
When you talked earlier about how travel back to Germany,
yes,
takes up some of your carbon footprint, a lot of it actually.
Yes.
So comparing Germany as well as other countries, other developed countries, how far behind is Malaysia right now in terms of those policies, in terms of green living, just when you observe how we live?
At the moment, the green living philosophy is not part of the society as a default option. It's not something that kids grow up with. We grew up with it in Germany. That's why it wasn't so difficult for us to carry it around. It's not part of the education system. It's only some schools that do something here and there. I think we need a whole generation to make this happen at a significant level. We need it to become part of the education system, part of what political parties stand for, communicate and make decisions on. There is a lot of existing legislation. The enforcement of that needs to be improved. And I think then we can shift Malaysia to a green society. We will need 20, 30 years for that. It's a long-term journey. It's not something you can do overnight. But I think the key is the whole education system really needs to embrace it. The everyday issues like waste, power generation, we need to shift to more renewable power. We need to shift to less consumption. And it's actually costing Malaysia a lot of money. I saw some statistics in terms of water and energy. Malaysia is consuming about 40% more than neighboring countries. This will cost Malaysians a lot of taxpayers' money, because to finance that, to finance the power plants, to finance the water pipe from Pahang to Selangor, that alone costs 10 billion ringgit. I mean, this money is gigantic amounts of money that are a reflection of our inefficiency of water and electricity use. The more inefficient we are, the more money we need to bring up to build those power plants and those infrastructures. So I hope to see it start with education, with people, with politicians, with government procurement, shifting more and more towards green. I've seen some encouraging signs there, but so far in the education system, I think it's sporadic and based on the individual school or college. We need to see that throughout the system being built into the curriculum.
Part of that education for the wider public is, of course, the media, which is a powerful tool in our country for environmental issues. Have they generally been receptive, and are there any specific issues that should be covered but right now aren't?
I think the media has been very proactive in Malaysia to cover environmental issues, the newspapers, the radio stations, the fact that we are sitting here. And I can't complain about media exposure. I mean, I've had a beautiful, comprehensive amount of media exposure over the years that I've been here. But I've always wondered, what is the impact of it? There seems to be so limited impact. There seems to be so limited follow-up. There are green articles, but there's no comment below it. There's no sharing. Whereas, you know, politically controversial stuff, loads of people comment on it, loads of people share it, but nobody seems to be really bothered about those media snippets that are out there. So I think we need to somehow crack this barrier towards action and get into action. And we need to link the messages with campaigns that really require people to do something rather than to just listen.
Coming back to your book then, where can people buy it or download it?
They can order it on my website, greenmanspeaks.com. They can buy it in the eco shop Just Life. It's in Ikano Power Station. It's in Mid Valley Gardens and a couple of other locations. Those are the two places. Physically, you can buy it in Just Life at this point in time. You can as well get the downloadable PDF of the book in the Google store. So just go on your handphone, and that is actually the cheapest way, only 6 ringgit. I wanted to make it really cheap and affordable for people. And as I think I mentioned before, I've written in the book, share it, use it. I mean, for the book as well, the physical book. The main hope is that my message will reach the hearts and minds of people and businesses as well. And everybody will see that this is a ethical responsibility and a great opportunity at the same time. And I would like to everyone ask themselves, as if their granddaughter was going to ask them, are you a benefit or a burden to the planet? With your own life, with your business. That is our personal area where we can make a difference.
Thank you very much for your time today, Matthias. I've been speaking with Matthias Gelber, author of The Green Man's Guide to Green Living and working, also founder of Eco Warriors. He's been discussing the book as well as providing tips and tricks on how we can all be living just that much greener. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.